Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current Online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
And good Saturday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in to Catch Our Drift. Joining me in studio, Ipsy Ed Bondarenko.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good to see you, man.
Glad to see you.
Thanks for bringing me the coffee.
I hope you enjoy it. I am.
I'm jacked up on it already.
This has caffeine.
I kind of figured it did. So there we go. Well, what we do on The Drift every Saturday is go over the news we put on The Daily Drift. It's the news
that you need to know.
There you go. See, we're simpatico. Just
practice,
like that. See,
practice, we're professionals. Practice, yes.
Yes, you would think. How long have we been doing this together now?
A year, maybe.
Has it been a year? Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah, well, that's what we do. So, well, let's take care of a little business. First National Bank. You might as well spend your money close to home. Use a local bank, First National Bank of Howell. You can call them at 734-449-7242. That's Angie McFarlane, who's our banking manager at the Whitmore Lake office, but they've got several offices around town, Brighton, Fowlerville, Genoa, Heartland, Howell, and Whitmore Lake. You can also go to www.fnbh.com or call Angie, 734-449-7242. Good people. Angie's a great personality, a great banker. It's just a really good office. So, and I've been to the other ones as well, but Angie's really good. 734-449-7242. And if you missed the show live with Ed and I.
Why? Wait a minute. What's
your
problem?
Why would you miss the show? Yes. You can catch us on Spreaker, on YouTube, on SoundCloud, and always archived at thedailydrift.com.
And occasionally I'll post it on my Facebook page, too.
Yeah. The pictures you put of me on Facebook, again, I guess I'm just getting old when I look at it.
Oh, no, man. I thought it was good.
Okay. Well, we got a special treat. You arranged to have another Senate candidate.
Yes.
For Michigan's state, U.S. Senate position to try and get Debbie Stabenow out of there. We've got Bob Carr on the line. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, glad to do it. I'm looking forward to it. Ed's been texting me and emailing me, so one of these days we'll meet in person. Right now we're going to do it over the telephone.
Yeah, well, we always enjoy being able to yuck it up a bit with our GOP candidates when they come, if they can find the time to come sit in the studio with us, and this is just a great place. You get to hang out in close quarters with Ed and I, and I showered this morning, so it'd be
it does. It smells noticeably better in here. It smells like team spirit. Yeah.
All right. Well, so Bob, let's start out with why you want to put yourself in the position of running for a U.S. Senate candidate. Among all things, I mean, the armpits of politics starts at the township level, really. But the pressure and everything else that goes with a U.S. Senate campaign, why do you want to get into this business?
Well, actually, there's no pressure because I've been under pressure all my life. I work in pressure situations. That's what I do. So I don't see it as pressure. But I was listening to your ad about First National Bank. For those of people that don't know, I grew up in over 20 foster homes, one of which was in Howell, Michigan. And I was going to first grade, I believe it was, when one night the door got kicked into the foster home house. My sister and I were grabbed, thrown in a car, and we ended up in Chicago and finally ended up with my mother. And during that next year, a year and a half, before the state of Michigan could go through the courts and get me back, I went to jail with my mother three times. That I can remember, her on one side of the bars and I on the other, and my sister. She was into prescription drugs, and she just couldn't give it up. So she had me kidnapped. She had me taken over there and those kind of things. And so when people talk about pressure, I don't know what they're talking about. I mean, you know, we all go through some things when we're growing up. I'm running for the United States Senate because I can win. I looked at the other candidates. I don't think they have a clue how to win. I think they have a clue. It's called money. And they think if they throw enough money, they're going to win. And it seems to me that they think they're more famous than they are. But also, they just don't seem to have a reason to run other than they'd like the position. I'm a person who's worked all over the state of Michigan changing towns. That's what I do. But before we go any further, I think I need to say that I did win a primary for the United States Congress in 1996, and it is the biggest district east of the Mississippi. I think Then it was in the United States. And I did it against a famous football star slash attorney for the largest law firm. And they spent well over $1 million against me. And I just beat the streets with my feet and went to every media station, every newspaper. Do not pass go. So when you say come into your offices, if I'm anywhere near you, you're going to see me popping in. All media is on the table for me. And so this was not on my radar, but I was down in Upton's district, and we were driving from Waterville to Hartford to Lawrence to Pawpaw, and the towns are, I say, completely boarded up, and they don't need to be. But no one has a clue how to turn these communities around without throwing huge money. And it doesn't need to be that way. It's a matter of philosophy with the citizens of the area. Why not use the beautiful architecture downtown? Let's get a theme and do it with the money that is from within, meaning your own business money, because you're going to spend it on a double white out somewhere in the rural area anyway. And so I looked at it, and I'm watching the emails from all these Congress people and these senators, and they're talking about how much they hate this party or that party, and how the 14th part of the 15th part of the of health care is not perfect, therefore the whole thing el stinko, and I'm a problem solver. So I decided I think I can beat these guys, and so I decided to run.
Okay, so for the people at home who may not have heard of your name before, give us a little background on what it is you're doing. Besides running, what you did as for a profession, and some of the things that you've done that would kind of translate over into being a U.S. senator.
Well, I ended up tracing my roots back to Mackinac Island, and on my visit back in 1972, I was working on Capitol Hill for a congressman. The lighthouse at Mackinac Island had been damaged by ice. So the big discussion was that it's time to tear it down. Well, I threw a fit. And so I wrote a letter to the editor after going to the state park and the Grand Hotel and the city and everybody I could talk to, and went back home, and I received a call, would I come on up? So about today in 1974, my wife and I honeymooned up here and began our effort to restore the lighthouse. I have done historic preservation, community development projects all over the state. And if you go to my website, electbobcarr.com, you'll see a list of 30 or 40 of the towns I use as examples. One of my most proud is the Benton Harbor Soup Kitchen. It was declared the worst town in America. So my wife and I decided, well, that's where we're going to go do a project. That project that we did was to provide a safe haven soup kitchen for the people of the streets there in Benton Harbor, which was the crime-laden town of all crime-laden towns under 100,000 people. Well, the idea was to use the food to get people into the kitchen and then to have the camaraderie, get them into responsibility and respect. And we're now on our 27th year. We did it without any grants. We did it without any taxes, using other people's money. And we limited the amount of donations to $500 per year per donor. And it's still operating and still operating debt free.
Yeah,
I want to take that kind of philosophy and get into the communities. I'm going to, as a senator, work with every community mayor, township leader, and we're going to come up with the ways their towns can go from nothing and a standing start into being very vibrant. And it actually isn't going to take too long. But I need to get into the Senate in order to do that, because that gives you, I guess they call it the bully pulpit.
Okay. Yeah. Well, all right. So let me ask you this. I mean, and that's good, because I remember the first time I went into Benton Harbor. I think it was the late 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had crossed over from St. Joe into, I think I made a wrong turn. I don't remember why I was there. But I literally drove through, Bob, downtown Benton Harbor, and I went, have I just gone into the Twilight Zone?
Yeah,
because it was a completely intact town, but there was no people. Most things were boarded up, and it was eerie. It was really that eerie. I never forgot that to this very day. And this is, that was probably 86, maybe. Yeah,
early 90s, I did the same thing.
And our soup kitchen started in 1980, and we actually lived down there And we're feeding then and are feeding now into the hundreds every day. And it's, we've not missed a day. It's never closed.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, and so the idea was to see if we couldn't change the rationale of people's thinking and they're thinking they have no hope. And Benton Harbor's starting to grow. Now, what's very interesting is that there's one of the candidates is running, and he's using BAD and then ASS, you know, he's really going to be tough. Well, you come down to the Benton Hotel and look at room 201 where we stayed while we were doing the soup kitchen at the corner of Water Street and Territorial. And if you think you're tough, you're not anywhere near tough.
That's a tough time, that's for sure.
The success of the program was not because we were tough. It's because we were kind. And so when a politician starts running like that, it sort of just makes it so that I'm doubly determined to go and take that Senate seat, because it's time that we get people inspired and show them the tools and to talk about it every day in our daily briefings and so on. And paint a picture.
Okay. So let me ask you, though, going into the U.S. Senate, there are things that have got to be done, because we all know that no matter what, whether you like what Paul Ryan does on the congressional side or not, at least the House, because we have Tim on once a month, our congressman down here, and the Congress, the House side, is at least getting things done, but nothing, absolutely nothing, is getting done in the Senate. So this is the question I want to ask you. Would you support going to 51 votes in the Senate instead of the 60 votes that we've used for the last 50 years, 40, whatever
70,
it is.
Yeah.
All right. That, for me, is the big killer, because unless you start using 51 votes, and I mean for everything, not just for nominations, for everything, because you're never going to get 60 votes when the nation is as divided and Washington is as filled with obstructionists as it is. Do you support using 51 votes in the Senate?
Well, I think you can, but now if the shoe was on the other foot, we'd probably say no. You know.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make, Bob. Because had the Democrats,
depends which party's in power, you know, and they want to get things done. However, I don't buy into the fact that we can't get 60 votes. I think the leadership is wrong. I think the tenure of the leadership is wrong. The candidate on the Democrat side, who's now the sitting senator, she used to use my office, by the way, when she was a congresswoman. She'd come to Traverse City, and I had an office in the Traverse City Airport. She spends her time emailing every day about what's wrong with the Republicans and what's wrong with Trump. We didn't elect her to do that. We elected her to take care of Michigan. She is the Michigan United States Senator. Unfortunately now, these elected senators become the willingly or unwillingly, knowingly or unknowingly, the hatchet people for party politics.
That's exactly right.
That does not need to take place, but that means the leadership has to take control. And when the leadership views themselves as the hatchet people against the other party, you're not going to have those people working together. However, in the past, we did have Democrats and Republicans working together. And so in the future, we're going to have Democrats and Republicans working together, because people like me are going to say enough already. When I run for the United States Senate, I'm going to talk about it's not just one party.
Well, that sounds good, Bob.
You're not doing a service to us by being so divided.
That's not necessary.
Yeah. I think it's very amateurish.
Yeah, go,
and
go ahead.
Sometimes I wonder if it is...
Hold on, Bob.
Ed's got to get into a position.
All right, Ed, go.
Oh, well, Bob, I just wanted to say it sounds good working together and working across the aisle, you know, in a spirit of a bipartisanship to accomplish goals. But when you had Harry Reid, who would refuse when he had the majority to bring anything to the floor, and now when you have Chuck Schumer, who now that he can't block stuff from coming to the floor, but he threatens every Democratic senator with lack of funding, lack of office position, whatever he can do, and promising to primary them if they don't withhold their votes from Republican projects. You're not going to see the kind of bipartisanship you're looking for, and I don't see that just as a failure on Mitch McConnell's part, but actually the actual obstructionism of the Democrats' part. So, I mean, right now we're having a hard time getting 51 votes.
Because you're calling a spade a spade. Now, with your radio show, and then someone in the Senate like myself, we can make that change. We can force that change. Because if we don't, yeah, we're going to do the 51.
Yeah.
However, realize when it flips and the Democrats become a majority, then, you know, we're going to say, did we really want to do that?
Yeah. Well, all right. So let's do this. We've got a caller, Joe, from Wyandotte, who's got a question for you, Bob. So, Derek, you want to bring it in? I'm not going to touch it because I'll probably drop a call.
Yeah. Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, Joe. How are you? You got a question for Bob?
Yeah. So far, I heard a lot of trash talking of Upton and Bob Young. I want to know, is he actually running against Debbie Stabenow?
I didn't trash talk either one of them. What I'm saying is the reason I ran is I don't like the people running because they're so tough. You know, I don't think that's helpful. And I think that you go into districts and you just see that they're falling apart. We have to make a change, and if the officials that are there aren't doing it, perhaps through the Senate, which is considered the top job, there's a bully pulpit there that we can start getting the ones who are in Congress, who are in townships, to start thinking in a different direction. And it takes a team effort. Now, for the projects that I do, I build teams, and the teams are from all kinds of walks of life. The point is, it's the goal that we're after, it's the mission that we're on, and the fact that we disagree in politics, well, good for us, because I view it as healthy to disagree in politics, because we all have different experiences, therefore we see from a different vision.
Okay.
So, and I think we have to realize that, and let it bug us. No, I always view that in the end, if we're on the right side, we have the ability to persuade and get other people to come to our point of view.
Okay, so Joe, didn't you have a policy question too?
No, nothing specific, but I guess we could throw out where does he stand on the tax cuts?
Yeah. Okay, there you go. So Bob, tax cuts, tax reforms next on the agenda, since the Republicans can't seem to do anything about repealing and replacing that they've been talking about for 7 years.
Well, how do you feel on Trump's? That, but I'll answer Joe's thing first. Simplicity is good. I think we all agree taxes are going to always be with us. So it's a matter of what form. Now, I'm not an expert in it, but I think we need changes. I think we need to make it simple. And I do believe that, not paying so many taxes can be a stimulus. And in the long run, we get more taxes.
Are you a fair tax person?
Say what?
Are you then a fair tax person or a flat tax person?
That was a hot issue up 2 or 4 years ago, and it sounded so great. And then people started coming up, well, except for this and except for that, you know. And so it's something I think over the lifetime that I live, every 2 years there's going to be changes. But I think we do need some changes, and it seems to me that the Republicans have got a fairly decent idea. Now, back to health care. 1996, if it's okay, Joe, I just can't answer your question on it in detail because I'm not an expert on it, but I think changes are coming. And those of you who are, get in there and help prime the pump for good legislation. Here's where I think the mistake is made on trying to pass health care. In 1996, I ran as a Republican against a flush candidate who had many important people come and speak on his behalf, and I ran on affordable health care for all, because up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan specifically, and we have some Lower Peninsula areas that are really, really poor, people were not having health care of any kind. And I got 58% of the vote, I think. You have to look it up, 57-58% of the vote. And I was the upset of the year. Well, people like my message, and I was told by my party faithful, if you run on health care, you're never going to go anywhere. Well, that wasn't true. The problem is I got so many votes, Congress Stupak couldn't go into the Clinton administration, even though they were thinking about it, because it was going to flip the seat. I think the word repeal should be taken completely out of the equation, because that is a firebrand word for the Democrats. I think if we said we want to go in and develop a better health care system And when we get it developed, we're going to develop a better health care system, because as people live it, they're going to see where there's changes. And I think we just talk about developing a better health care system. We take the firebrand away. We take the fact that we're repealing the other party's idea away, and it allows some of them to cross the aisle. Now, I say that because that's how I operate in my projects that I bring out of the fire and I'm successful with. And by the way, I take on projects that are impossible, historic projects, things that are in the 11th hour, and that kind of thing. And I don't lose them because we use rhetoric that is all-encompassing.
Yeah. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit, because the Senate's going to have some say, I think, as on foreign policy, as things start to heat up in Korea like they're not heating up already. Where do you stand, Bob, on the point of, do we take action in North Korea? And if so, do we wait or do we go preemptive? Do we wait for an attack from Korea or do we go preemptive? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I don't think the listeners think that I have all the information, because I'm not sitting in the meetings. You've got a guy there that has a little tiny country and probably wants his country to be as strong as he can make it. Now, unfortunately, for him to do that, he's doing it with killing and separating and all those kind of things. And so I think we have the ability to go in there and take out his missiles and probably do it in a fortnight. We can probably do it in an hour. Is that something we should do? Heavens knows what the people in Washington, D.C. are going to decide to do about that. But because he's so erratic, we have to be as tough as we can.
Yeah.
Some people say, well, you need to back off, you know, he's just blustering. Well, is he?
Yeah, you never know. So, Bob, we've got another healthcare question for you from Ken in Livonia. Derek, you want to bring Ken on?
Yeah, I'm just calling to make a comment that we need to replace Obamacare. Not replace it. We need to get rid of Obamacare, but not replace it. The federal government has no business in the healthcare industry. I just want to make a quick observation. I used to have Blue Cross Blue Shield. I was paying for it out of pocket. It was a plan that I could afford, and then the federal government took it from me. Now I have no insurance, and I just think that the way the healthcare system was before Obamacare, it was just fine. People like me were happy, and it makes me angry when I hear Republicans saying, well, we want to fix the healthcare system, because there was nothing wrong with it in the first
place. Good point, Ken. We got a couple minutes. Let's let Bob respond.
I think there's always going to be something wrong with the healthcare system. You know, I think it's like climbing a ladder, and we step on different rungs of the ladder. And as we go up, you know, there are changes that are always going to be made. The thing is to get smarter. And I'm fortunate. I graduated from a very large medical university, and my friends, almost all of them, went into the medical fields. And I have a partner in my aviation. We have a flight school for kids to learn to fly for about half price, and we are debt-free. He went to Vietnam after he got out of medical school, and he was not drafted. He was not in the military. And now he does dentistry out of the back of his car, as it were, and goes into homes and does his dentistry. So there's real service there. But I when we say we replace, don't replace, you know, I don't give a rip. What I do want is that we come up with a health care plan every day that's better than it was the day before.
Yeah, so here's what I'm looking at, Bob. The GOP has failed miserably, and that's due to lack of leadership maybe, or just the fact that the establishment doesn't want anything changed. So Trump is now, what we're hearing, is going to do some executive actions, there's the end of the hour. Bob, we're going to have to get you on again.
Are we done?
Yeah,
listen,
we're done.
I'd like to do a weekly update on how campaign's going, because I know the listeners would just like to know what's inside of a Senate candidate.
Okay, well, we'll be in, we'll be in touch. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. Sorry we ran so short of time. Take care.
It's fun when we're having fun. Thank you, everybody, for calling.
Take care. And we'll see you all on the other side of the break.
People are always on the go, driving to work, running errands. How do they keep informed? They listen to Wham Talk 1600 just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham Radio for the latest issues, discussed by hosts like Joe Pags, Veyron X, and Dana Lesh. And they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 today and advertise your business with Wham Radio and whamradio.com. whamradio.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen McHugh. Angry words between President Trump and the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, over the federal response to hurricane recovery operations.
After she criticized the federal response, saying if it doesn't speed up, we'll see something close to a genocide. The president slammed her on Twitter, and now the mayor has responded to that.
I am not going to be distracted by small comments, by politics, by petty issues. This is one goal, and it is to save lives.
And Governor Roseau said now is not the time for petty differences. Now is the time to save lives.
Fox's Mike Tobin in San Juan. The president tweeted the Cruz is demonstrating poor leadership. HHS Secretary Tom Price is history.
After days of public scrutiny, apologies, and a promise to pay back at least some of the money he used to fly in private jets, HHS Secretary Tom Price becoming the first cabinet secretary of this administration to resign.
Fox's Ellison Barber. Fox News, we report, you decide.
When your major home appliance stops working, do you want to fix it? No. You want someone who knows what they're doing, and that's not you. It's MasterTech. Bill and Joe Henderson at MasterTech have been taking care of people in Ann Arbor and Southeast Michigan for over 30 years. They've been to my house many times and always solved the problem. They do both residential and commercial work and treat their customers and employees like family. Their technicians are friendly, knowledgeable, and on time. Stop by at 1919 Federal Boulevard in Ann Arbor off Stadium by the post office. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5 p.m. and even on Saturday from 9 to 2. Or call 734-662-0641. That's 734-662-0641. You can also visit their website at mastertechappliance.com. That's MasterTechAppliance.com. And tell Bill Linda says hi.
Your bridge to recovery and wellness is WellBridge. WellBridge is redefining the rehabilitation and nursing care experience with the most amazing resort-like care facilities you've ever seen. Their driving goal is to provide each guest with an epic experience. And in their pursuit of excellence, WellBridge asks each guest to complete a customer satisfaction survey after their stay. To date, they've earned a satisfaction rate of 100%. Here are some of the comments received. This is my home away from home. This place is outstanding and everyone is super kind. I am beyond pleased with all the care I received. The staff is so passionate for what they do and it shows. This was my mother's third stay here and she always loves it. I've referred this place to many already. My stay has been fantastic. For rehabilitation and nursing care, ask for something epic. Ask for WellBridge. In Brighton, Fenton, Novi, and Pinckney. Now looking for talented nurses and certified nurse assistants to join their growing team. Learn more at thewellbridgegroup.com. WellBridge, your bridge to recovery and wellness starts here.
It's been 5 years since we met Kelly Brighton, just before her weight loss surgery.
I was almost 300 pounds. Because of the Michigan Bariatric Institute, I've lost the weight. I now have the tools to keep it off. I am a better mom, I am a better wife, and I'm just a better Kelly Brighton, I think.
Begin your journey. Try a free monthly educational seminar at St. Joe's Livingston. Visit stjoeshealth.org/MBI to learn more.
Well, I'm so above you, and it's fine to see. But I came to love you anyway. So you tore my heart out, and I don't mind bleeding. Any old time you keep me waiting, keep me.
And welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to Catch Our Drift. Me and Ed Bondarenka in studio.
Hey, welcome back.
Yeah, well, had Bob Carr running for Senate on last half hour. But let's take care of a little business before we move on to other things. Denim and Diamonds. If you've never been to La Casa's premier event, it's tonight, 5:30 to 10 at the Cross W Ranch in Howell. And La Casa's a great community organization to do all kinds of things. And for $100, it includes your parking, dinner, drinks, gambling, all night long entertainment. You can even get a chance at winning a $6,000 diamond by what they call Go Diamond Mining, right? It's one of these kind of fun things that you can do. Country cooking, horse shows, wine, beer, spirit, and cigar bar. For $100, folks, you can't do better than Denim and Diamonds tonight. Yes, a piece. And you can reach them at 517-548-1350, or you can go to La Casa, L-A-C-A-S-A Center, lacasacenter.org, and get hold of them. High energy music tonight from Carrie Holmes. So it should be a really fun event. Join us for a kinking party tonight at Denim and Diamonds. Boy, it's hard for me to get that out. Saturday, September 30th. That's tonight, 5:30 to 10. So if you're looking for something to do, worthwhile cause, and be able to drink and eat, it's a great cause. $100 a person.
I was looking to see if it was tax deductible.
I don't know, but I'm betting it is. I'm betting it is. So you tax
give it a try, folks. Give it. Could go wrong.
How can you go wrong? $100 for dinner and drinks. I mean, that's all you can drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. All right, I'll get my $100 worth. I can assure you of that. All right. So let's take a call from Mark, who's been waiting patiently. Mark from Howell. He's got a healthcare comment. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark.
Well, thank you very much. How are you, gentlemen, today?
Oh, we're doing good. We're doing fabulous. Go ahead. What's your comment, Mark?
Well, yes, I'm calling. I have a message for Mr. Carr, our legislators in Washington, and President Trump, for that matter. I don't want repeal or replace. I want the federal government out of our health care altogether. I want it brought back down to the state level where we can have competing market, open a free market. We'll have competition between carriers and make it affordable. We can handle it on a state level. Thank you very much, federal government. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, well, I hit it right on the head.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
What about Medicare? Where do you stand on Medicare?
Well, I think we've become a welfare state. I think that with the influx of the people coming over the border and us states across this country accepting more people into their states, we've become overburdened, and we've got a lot of freeloaders adding to the system. There has to be some controls and on that system.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
That's a given right
there. You can't have open borders and open welfare benefits, be it medical or cash or food or anything else. So, well, great comment, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All righty. And here's what keeps coming back to my mind when I hear things like that from Mark and Ken, and I think so many of us feel that way, and that's one of the reasons we voted for Trump. And this latest executive order that we hear might be coming of he's going to let us buy across state lines. I don't know that it's the golden bullet or anything, but I think that in itself would allow. Here's the other thing. Let us buy whatever plan we need. These young millennials that are out there, they just need catastrophic insurance. They don't need something that's going to cover the trips to the doctor or the kids' bills because they don't have any kids, right? So give them a cheap, easy monthly plan that covers them in case of whatever, you know, the catastrophic things. And I think, you know, Ken used to, and he's right. Ken used to have a plan. I used to be self-employed and had a plan that I could afford. Did it have high deductibles? Yes, it did. But I was covered for the catastrophic stuff. And when I was self-employed, I paid cash to my doctor when I went for a visit. I didn't bother using insurance. I just paid cash. And I think if we can get back to the simpler times of, you know what, take care of your doctor visits, whatever, get your health insurance for the catastrophic, for the hospital stays, for those things that are very expensive. It's insurance, right? You don't get insurance that covers your oil changes in your car either, do you?
No, but you know what? It just occurred to me, and you were saying, you know, the doctor. I remember a time when doctors came to the house, and I'm wondering if the recession of doctors coming to houses coincided with the rise of health insurance And so basically the doctor couldn't come to the house because he couldn't bring his accountant with him and the person doing the medical bill prep. And he'd have to bring a whole office with him to come and do an office, I'd rather visit in your home. And I'm wondering if there's a correlation there.
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, it's just the way civilization has gone, I guess. But I really honestly believe it's the regulation that is killing the industry. It really is.
I don't see how Trump can do an executive order on that, though. That is a law. That on the crossing straight lines, it was done in the 50s.
I don't know.
And I really don't. I mean,
well, we all know executive orders.
Executive
orders. Executive
orders
are executive orders. The one I'd like to see, take away Congress's health care. If you're not going to give us a system that works for us or put them on, make them, I don't know if he can do that either. But doesn't matter. Obama broke every rule in the book with his executive orders. Now, I'm not saying two wrongs make a right. So,
there you go.
But
and the other thing is, the thing about Congress, and I don't want to go down this track too far because we have other things to do, but basically Congress has an employer. And so they have employer health care. All right? I have an employer, or had, and I have employer health care. So you have employer health care. So really Obamacare may be driving up certain costs. It is driving up our payments out of pocket. I realize that. But having to buy insurance on the open market, anybody with an employer doesn't need to do that, and that includes Congress. So I've been kind of ambivalent about that claim. Well, let Congress sit under Obamacare. Well, they have an employer.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, you make sense on that one. Let's take a call from Walter in Belleville. Walter, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, you guys got so many good callers and great ideas, man, about the Obama never did care, health care thing. And
now we got you.
Yeah, oh, man, I'm... You know I'm going to bring it, man, so get ready.
Go on, set it on fire, Walter. Let's hear it. What do you got?
Only difference in my get ready, you know, that's a line from T.D. Snake. That's right, I said T.D. Snake. Some people call him T.D. Jakes. His name changed when he endorsed Obama, so I call him T.D. Snake now. But anyway, I want to talk about these clowns, like some of my past Congress people, well, present Congress people. You remember, let's take a trip down memory lane. How soon do we forget, man? You remember how a lot of these people started out quiet and humble? It seemed like they was the best thing under God's son. You know.
Like who? Give me the names.
John McCain.
No.
Well, let's not forget about John, the drunken stupor Boehner. Okay? And how these people used to come on talk shows like your guys. Well, let's say the national talk shows, talking like they were so righteous and so conservative. And as soon as they got in there, what did they do?
They joined the swamp.
They started lying. And then you know what they do when they lie? Like some of these crooks that we got, like John McCain and the rest of them, who lied, talking about they was going to do away with Obamacare. You notice how they avoid coming on the talk shows when they do that?
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. In fact, they don't come on our talk show at all. You know, is that one of them calling in? We got a lot of lights on the board. Is that John McCain calling in?
No, not yet. But we'll never get a John McCain on this show after all the nasty things I say about him on Twitter and Facebook and on the air live. All right, Walter, well, you made a great point. We've got a bunch of calls stacking up on us, but you're right. People like John McCain need to be out of office. And let this be fair warning to all these people running for our current open position that Dave Trott's vacating. Do what you say, say what you mean, get in there and be effective. Don't turn into one of the swamp denizens yourself, okay?
Okay, don't pull no punches when you ask them questions. You will find out if they're a devil or not.
You got it. All right, take care, Walter. Let's take a call from Todd in Whitmore Lake. Todd, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to hear from you guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, and going back to what you guys said about employer health care, everybody's got an employer. When you talked about Congress, whether it be state or federal, we are their employer, so they should definitely be listening to us when it comes down to things.
Obviously, definitely.
But we have to get together and make that change. But I'd like to drop on you when it comes to the government getting involved in healthcare, federal or state or local, stay out of it. Let the free market system work. A perfect example would be LASIK eye surgery. When that first came out, if I'm not mistaken, it was about $3,000 or $4,000 an eye. Now, the insurance companies didn't want to pick it up to cover it. So guess what? the free market system worked. Everybody's competing for the business. Now you're down to about $200 or $300 an eye.
Yeah, it's a good point. I've not, you know what? And I was still thinking it was in the expensive range because I need to get one of my eyes done.
I've heard of some clinics like that, too, that are they don't take insurance. Some in some of the western states and people yep. going out there and they're getting work done, knee surgeries and the like, and people are paying out of pocket.
Yeah, Texas is a big example of, I think it's called Direct Primary Care, the physicians group, and I forget what city it's in. They refuse any insurances, and they're forcing the health care providers to compete for the business. They don't have this one system like we have in Michigan, that Blue Cross Blue Shield or HAP or whatever, where there is no competition. Now, they're I think up to about 12 or 14 different health care providers that compete for the business.
You know, there was a video I saw on the internet recently. It was done off of True TV. It was pretty popular. And this guy goes through and he's showing all of the hidden costs of health care and why drugs are a certain cost. And there's a book that the hospital keeps that shows the prices that they are going to charge for. I mean, like you go in for surgery, you're going to pay $5 for an aspirin. I'm exaggerating, but my wife takes some heavy-duty medication. Hi, honey. And basically, it might cost $2,700 a month for this one prescription, but the hospital can cut us a deal because I don't have insurance currently for $900. Well, how does that work?
Yeah,
it's just they're not marking it up against the insurance company.
Yeah, once again, you're proving the system to be
rigged.
False and rigged and all these different terms that we could put up on it.
Yeah. Well, great points, Todd. Appreciate it. Call us again, man. Love getting your calls out of Whitmore Lake.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Let's take a call from JB in Chicago. Welcome to the show.
Hello there.
Yes, you're on.
Hi, Gary.
Hey.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Pretty good.
I wanted to comment about the healthcare situation. I've worked in healthcare for about 6.5 years now. And I can tell you that the problem with healthcare, and a lot of people don't seem to grasp, is that it's all about following the trail of money. A lot of the people that are voting in Congress to either, you know, fix Obamacare or keep Obamacare, these are people that line their pockets by insurance companies. You know, insurance companies have a monopoly, basically. And so what they do is they get the people in office who support their vision of what, you know, they think is more profitable. And I can't tell you, every day I talk to very concerned people who are losing their insurance, lost their insurance, can't afford their insurance. And they ask me questions, and I'm fairly well-versed in insurance. As I said, I've done it for a few years now. And sometimes even I can't answer some of the questions that these people have for me, you know, because they ask me, well, you know, I had insurance before Obamacare. What happened to that insurance? And I was like, I don't know. And the problem is that the Democrats are all turning, you know, against the establishment as far as the Republicans, because let's face it, we are the establishment. But the thing is that Trump, in particular, is trying to fix a problem that the Democrats created, you know, and people don't seem to understand if it wasn't broken, Trump wouldn't have to fix it.
So let me ask you, if being in the state of Illinois,
yes,
if there was an executive action, or better yet, if Congress actually did their damn job and got us something that allowed you to buy across state lines, what would that do? Would that really increase competition at the insurance level? I'm not talking healthcare, because let's face it, healthcare and insurance are not the same thing.
Right.
Would it increase enough competition to drive insurance rates down if you could buy across state lines?
Well, first of all, that's a huge if Congress did their job. But I will say that, in my experience and what I've seen, yes, it would, definitely. I mean, there's no business in the world that doesn't fare better for the consumer.
If there's more competition.
With more competition. Well, healthcare is one of those things.
The only problem
with healthcare, however, is, as I started to say at the beginning, is that it's so connected to political sides. When you've got senators and congressmen lining their pockets from the insurance companies, of course they're not. They're going to, you know, vote for them instead of what's good for the people.
How many? Let me give an example here. Suppose there was a law in every state that you could only sell in a state the car that was built in that state.
Right.
Well, the price of cars would be phenomenally high. You'd have 50 factories for every model of car in the country. So economies of scale say that if you can sell insurance across state lines, that you can market to a much larger segment. Your administrative overhead can be divided. In fact, even your base, your they have a term for the actuaries used for that, where the people who are contributing to the profits of the insurance company so that they can make payouts, well, that grows. So you get economies of scale. Am I right?
That's true, too. Yeah, that's definitely true. However, with the healthcare situation, we really, even though we're supposed to be, quote-unquote, heavily regulated, we're really not. There's no one really paying attention. I mean, they pay attention at election time. You know, they pay attention when it suits their purpose. But on a day-to-day basis, what I see, I don't see a whole lot of reining in. I don't see insurance companies doing things that are good for the consumer. I see them doing whatever they need to do to get their politicians elected.
Yeah, so they're you know, making money and reinforcing that making of money by buying politicians is what it comes down
right.
to.
Right, and they're making money by making money.
Yeah.
You know, it's a vicious circle. And the people that are paying, unfortunately, are me and Gary and Ed and my grandmother and my, you know, my mom and my dad and my friends. But, you know, we're not part of that that democratic side where they just want to give to everyone. Everything
right.
should be free. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Well, great call, Jasmine.
Yeah.
It's good to hear from you. Make sure you call in again and let us know what's going on, because I want to know how this executive order may help. Because I'm hoping it's going to be a magic bullet. I know it's not. I'm just being optimistic. But great call. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye. Okay. Let's take a call from Jenny in Brownstown. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Jenny.
What's going on, Jenny?
Well, I don't know about this. I mean, I'm not sure if this town pricing, because I've been reading in the news about it, certain places, you know, that he did wrong. But I'm not sure if it's, like, because people don't like Trump that they were using him as a scapegoat, Tom Price, or if he really did use money wrongly.
I think that Tom Price overstepped his bounds when it came to spending money on charter flights. And God bless him, maybe he was trying to get enough people around the country to do the things that needed to get support. But in the end, you spent more than you probably should have, and your results have been negligible. I mean, one of the reasons they brought Tom Price in was because he was connected in D.C. and that he was supposed to help get a repeal and replace done, right? And we never got there.
He didn't do anything. He was too connected.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe that's the point. Maybe he was.
Well,
too
I think
connected.
He did do things from within. Actually, I think he should have done it quicker. If you remember, there was this plan: get the bill passed, then get Tom Price to make rules, because these rules in Obamacare were at the discretion of the secretary, which was Sebelius before Catherine Sebelius, and so she was making all these rules up as she went along. And then Tom Price was supposed to make the same decisions in the opposite direction. And I'm not sure that was happening fast enough, although I do know it was happening. So I think as I watched Trump's face when he was announcing it, I see a manager who felt he was kind of betrayed by a subordinate. He was kind of sandbagged by what happened. And I think he actually felt upset that somebody was not being as frugal as they should be while they were working for him, just as if they were working in Trump Tower and he found out that they were overspending his money.
Okay, then it is true, and then that's good, because then he should be gone.
Yeah, I think it was a good decision. I mean, and he probably knew himself that he let down, and maybe I don't understand how you don't know that in working for Trump. You better be business related.
Yeah. Remember the old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
One of my favorite sayings.
Yeah, and the swamp assimilates. So when you go in, you may have been frugal, but then you say, oh, well, look, so-and-so does it, or what's her face? Pelosi used to fly a military flight to San Francisco every week unnecessarily, right, at the government dime. So you look at the habits and you go, well, I'm just doing this. That's not so bad. I'm just doing – you don't realize, yeah, it is bad. It's you can't just make a relative I'm not as bad as her.
Yeah. What else you got, Jenny? Anything?
The other point I want to make is I don't know if it's right to do these executive orders within the health care bill, but – maybe that's what dang well has to happen.
Yeah, I know two rights or two wrongs don't make a right, all right? And I'm not, but you know what? Doggone it, the Republicans are betraying us. And that's Paul Ryan, that's our Congress people, it's our senators more than anybody, not senators, more than anybody.
Yeah,
I should take that back. Because I think Congress has done, they've passed, according to Tim, over the last 8 years, 450-some bills that have never gotten into the Senate and gotten voted on.
Or by Senate.
Yeah, by the Senate. So I blame our senators. And that's in our case, Debbie Stabenow and Gary Peters are two obstructionists. They're not representing Michigan. They're representing Chuck Schumer, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton. They're not doing what's best for the American people. And that's why Debbie Stabenow needs to go away, period. She's not doing for the people of Michigan what she's supposed to be doing.
But Mitch needs to go away, too.
I agree. That man is not a leader. He's a coward.
Murkowski, McCain, and...
Those guys need to go, too. McCain needs to just quit.
Yeah.
Because he's doing it under bitterness.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I believe that's true. All right. Well, thanks, Jenny. I appreciate the call.
Yep. Okay, bye.
Take care. All right. So, man, the calls are just rocking us today.
Let's get to our first topic.
Do we have any? No. It's just been one of those days. Yeah. We just went through. Well, let's talk Judge Roy Moore. Because I had a guy that I'm 99% of the time on Twitter the same with, right? Where all our ideals are the same, but he kind of bashed me for backing Trump, who ended up backing Moore after he lost to Strange, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a big loss. You know, Trump's an idiot. He went after Strange. People, I think, need to understand why Donald Trump had to back Strange over Moore.
Tell us.
You get it, right?
Tell us.
Okay, it's very simple. Here you've got Moore and you've got Strange, right? The more conservative guy is Moore, but Luther Strange backs the Trump agenda too, right?
Yes.
So I've got
a
guy.
And he's an incumbent.
And he's an incumbent. I've got a guy. Both of them are going to back the Trump agenda, right? But I've got one guy who's going to be voting over the next 2 months, hopefully on tax reform, and maybe if they bring up Obama, health care again, whatever.
Yep.
You can't not back the guy that you're depending on for one. We can't get enough. We can't get 51 votes right now. Why would you alienate
Trump
Strange?
Said that, too, at that rally.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Let's just take Rick's show. He won't know that.
Or maybe we're taking your show.
I know. It's just, well, thanks again to the listeners. Lots of great calls. And go to thedailydrift.com.
For the news you need to know.
There you go. We'll see you all next week. Take care.